Blog Talk Radio.
Are you due for a relationship makeover? If you had the power to wave a magic wand, would you use it to improve your relationship? Well, there may be some hope. You're about to embark upon a journey. A journey that may prove to be vital in improving your relationship, whether it be with your spouse, significant other, children, co-worker, family, friends, or even yourself. A journey that if you simply open your mind to desiring a positive change in your relationship by listening to this show, it just might happen. You're about to take a journey into the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Warning, the show can be contagious.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Dr. Jesse Walker Show. I'm your host. I'm Dr. Jesse Walker. I'm going to be with you for the next 60 minutes. I was about to say 60 seconds. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. We've got a very good show for you playing tonight. I'm certainly looking forward to it, and I trust that you all are as well. I want to go ahead and take this opportunity to thank everyone that's been faithful listeners with us over the past 7 years that we've been on the air. And I hope you're still having as much fun as I am. I'm enjoying the show coming to you from week to week. And, of course, as always, if there's something that you would like us to present over the airwaves, by all means, please feel free to send us a comment. You can send your comments in at online at drjessewalker.com or information at drjessewalker.com. Any one of those would do. Online at drjessewalker.com or info at drjessewalker.com. That will get it as well. All right, tonight's topic we're going to be talking about, do social relationships have to be difficult? We have presented some of those in the past where we've mentioned, as a matter of fact, last week, the topic was, do relationships have to be difficult? Do relationships, and I promised you all that we would do a follow-up this evening on that particular one, and which is what we're going to be doing tonight. Do social relationships have to be difficult? And by social relationships, I'm talking about those relationships whereby we actually, the social relationships are the ones whereby we're talking about everybody just basically sort of getting along. And I know that that might sound like it's humanly impossible, that everybody from every walk of life is going to get along. And that's not necessarily, you know, an expectation. But then the question becomes, why can't that be an expectation? That everybody just simply, you know, start getting along. Why is it that we can't seem to embrace each other's differences and respect how one another feel, and even come to terms of being able to agree to disagree? Is it because we're allowing pride, circumstance, situations to fall into play? Is it because of biases, prejudices that we have within ourselves that we don't truly want to admit to? You know, it can be a number of factors, you know. So these are some of the things that we will explore tonight as we get into the show. You can go to just a quick commercial. You can go to my website, drjessewalker.com or drjessewalkerinc.com. And you can certainly view my website for information on my website that may be of interest to you. At this time, we're going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Ms. Autry Blake. She's going to give you her commercial and tell you about herself. Ms. Blake, welcome to the show this evening. It's always a pleasure to have you on the air.
Hi, Dr. Walker. How are you doing?
Doing really, really well. I trust you are as well.
I am. Just to give my very brief commercial, as probably your listeners know, I am also an author, as yourself, of probably three books, actually. The book Falling in Love with Me and the e-book for that, as well as the novel Dying to Wake Up, which is an e-book. Falling in Love with Me is a hard soft cover as well as an e-book. But you can find them both if you go to Amazon.com and just put in Falling in Love with Me and Audrey Blake. I'm also a professionally certified life coach. When I offer life coaching packages, they can be found on my website at stringleaders.org. Or you can give us a call. The office number is 770-866-2162. Again, that's 770-866-2162. And that's all for my services currently.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Ms. Blake, let me just ask you quickly here. Tonight's topic is, do social relationships have to be difficult? Before we get into tonight's story on that one, before we're going to ask people to go ahead and start sending in their comments in reference to that. A lot of people do send in comments when they choose not to bother with, coming over the air. But let me ask you, last week's show we did, do relationships have to be difficult? And, of course, that was I found it to be a very interesting show on last week, one of which I certainly enjoyed. Just for me to recap a small component of last week's show, do relationships have to be so difficult? And I want to just give a synopsis and say, in responding to that, I think the relationships are basically what the individuals make it to be. The individuals in the relationship make it to be. And I clearly don't think that relationships have to be that difficult if you are in the right relationship. I think that that's the key, that you've got to be in the right relationship. If it's a strain, a constant strain on that relationship, then in my humble opinion, then there might be a possibility that you're in the wrong relationship. And even if it is a strain, let's say you're married and you're having some difficulty in it, then you will certainly want to get some type of professional help to see if you can. I think you owe the marriage everything that you possibly can give it and beyond. And once you've done that, if it's just not working, then you might want to revisit that situation. Ms. Blake, give me your thoughts. Just to recap last week's show, do relationships have to be difficult?
No, they do not have to be difficult. And I definitely totally agree with what you just stated. It's about the two individuals, because people make relationships. It does take some degree of work. I mean, it doesn't, for some people they say it flows, but I think there's always, when you're blending two different personalities, it takes some compromise at times. Lots of communication, as we always say. And again, I'm in complete agreement with you. If it is just constantly a struggle, then maybe you didn't make the right choice. Now, I'm talking about relationship in terms of a dating relationship. Now, in a marriage relationship, I always say on the show, that's a deeper level of commitment. And so you don't just walk away from that. And I definitely encourage people to seek counseling. But at some point, even in that process, as we said before, it just may not be the right one.
And I think that that's what people have to look at, you know, the reality of that, which can be very difficult. It can be very difficult when you're talking about letting a relationship that you've invested into, time and energy and money, and I mean, most importantly, your time, you know, to let that go, especially in terms of a marriage. And I think that even if people have been together in a relationship for an extended period of time, just dating, I think that too can be, you know, there's going to be some repercussions. In other words, you're going to feel some pain. And I think that the challenge becomes, you know, trying to endure that pain, that pain. You know, and so, I mean, how do people just endure? And everybody's different. In your opinion, how do people just endure?
Well, I think we've all been down that road. I certainly have more than once. And
me too.
It's a matter of time. I mean, what I found over everything, because heartache is very painful. And for those of us who love more deeply, we probably hurt more deeply. But what I have found from my experience is over time. It's nothing anybody really could say. You certainly can do things to keep yourself active and busy and maybe fill in the time that you would have been spending with that person with other activities. But you also have to take some time, as you and I have said before, to just get to know who we are, to look introspectively during that time. But just over time itself, that saying that time does heal, they say all wounds, I believe it really can if you allow it to.
And I think that that's the key. You've got to allow time to heal your wound. Now, I do believe that, you know, talking through some situations with a good close friend, I think that that sometimes can help, you know, but it's not a one-size-fits-all and it's not necessarily a cure-all because I think that even when you go to therapy, if you should choose to go to therapy, it's going to take time. Time is either going to be your best friend or your worst enemy. Ms. Blake, speak on that because I never heard that before.
Right. And I think everything happens with time. But something you just said about talking, I do encourage people. I'm a talker, and so I always encourage people to express themselves. But here, and you mentioned a therapist. I think that's good when you go to somebody who's trained. Now, the risk you run, or sometimes the problem is when people are talking to their friends, be careful, not just who you're talking to because of the trust factor, but even just as important is the fact that don't keep telling the story over and over. Sometimes we rehearse the story because you'll never heal. I equate it to a wound that if you keep pulling the scab off the wound, it'll never heal. So sometimes I think we tell the story too often.
Okay, that is a very valid point that you're making, especially when you give your analogy of the wound, that when you're pulling the scab off of it. Because you do need it, you know, if you're going to take it off, that open wound depends on the severity of it. It needs fresh air. It needs fresh air to even to heal. And it's often said that with that fresh air, it comes healing. So everything naturally, if you allow things to happen just naturally and say, you know what, I'm hurting. And, of course, if you're hurting so bad, of course, you need to talk to the right people, which are usually professionals out there, sacrifice the money, the cost, but get you some professional help. Because at the end of the day, your friends could be trying to tell you something. Oh, don't call him if that's the case. You know, don't call him. Wait for him to call you. And he's never calling because you're the one. Let's say, that, for example, if the woman were the one that said, hey, I want you to get out and don't ever come back here. You know, she kicks him out. And he's heard this now 5 times, you know, different times. And all of a sudden now he takes her up on that. And 3 days have gone by, he hasn't called her. She hasn't heard from him. And she's calling her girlfriend and saying, you know, I haven't heard from him. I wonder, you know, he know I'm mad. He needs to call me. But you told him to get out. And he's heard that a number of times. So he took her up on it. What is he to do now?
Right.
I mean,
and Dr. Walker, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I was just going to say, are people saying what they mean and meaning what they say? And if she didn't mean that, then she should not. She should have quickly, you know, after a day or so, you know, after she's calmed down, say, look, I didn't mean that. I was just mad. But sometimes people have this expectation that, oh, you know, he know I didn't mean that, or she know I didn't mean that. She know I didn't mean that. Well, you're not making any effort to correct that. You know, do social relationships have to be difficult? Go ahead, Ms. Blake. Let me hear what you had to say.
And the other thing is, say, for instance, someone cheats, and that person, I'm really talking about a relationship, and it could be a marriage, too, but they break up because of an affair. You know, at some point, and I guess I'm speaking from the female standpoint, we've got to stop telling the story. You know, well, why are y'all not together? Oh, girl, let me tell you what he did. You know, oh, I caught him doing this. But if you keep, that's that rehearsing it. At some point, you need to just say, we're not together. And offer no more explanation because you've told it enough. And all you're doing is just keep digging into that. You're infecting the wound. You're not letting it heal. You know, you're rehearsing it.
Right. I agree with you. I think we're going to have a, let's go to phone lines before we even go to the story tonight. Let's go to 786-985. Welcome to the Dr. Jessica Walker Show. Who do we have on the air?
You have Ms. X.
Ms. X, thank you for joining us. Ms. X, give us your comment. What do you think about what we've expressed this evening?
Well, I think that's one of the worst hurts to get over, because it's not even like a wound that you can put. It's not like something you can take a pill or you can get something and rub on it, or you know, it's one of those things that, like, I forget the other speaker's name. She said that, you know, you need to put time on it, and time sometimes seems like forever.
Right.
You know, and it takes so many forms for so many different people. It's like you said, it's not one size fits all.
Right.
And I think with some relationships, especially those that we find to be more, I guess, toxic, I think those you need to just cut off. You need to find a way to just cut them off, as opposed to lingering, like she said, because all you do is you keep reopening it, you keep rehashing it, and then you got to go through it again. And it's not that it hurts any less. It may hurt even deeper. I think the sooner you get over it, the better.
But then that's the key, and you're saying that, Ms. X, and the key is, you say the sooner, and that sounds idealistic, but can we really put a time on healing?
No, you can't really put a time on it, because again, just like you said, it's not one size fits all. Some people may get over it sooner than later. You know, there are a lot of factors. You know, in your youth, you tend to get over things a whole lot faster. And then as you age, you know, you say, oh, boy, I'm not that little hot thing that I was when I was young. You know, people aren't coming along quick enough. Sometimes it's because we meet other people, and it helps us to get over the old relationship. But if those new relationships as you get older are not coming as fast, you know, then it can prolong the healing.
Well, you know, if people had a glimpse of realizing that as they progress in life, as they mature in life, whatever we want to say, in a nutshell, as we get older in life, shouldn't we perhaps take more stock of trying to salvage or save our relationships? Ms. Blake, let me go to you on that one first, and then we're going to go right to the story. Ms. X, stand by, please. Go ahead, Ms. Blake.
Well, I don't believe that we should – I'm just going to put it out there. I don't think we should tolerate foolishness just because we're getting older. Okay?
Right, I agree with that. Mm-hmm.
Definitely you want to invest in it. You want to have stability. I mean, like, take myself. I'm a woman dating in her 50s. Definitely you don't just want to go from this one to that one to that one, you know. You want more stability in your life. But at the same time, if you're in something unhealthy, I don't think you should say, well, I got to make this work because the pickings are few. I think you're shortchanging yourself.
I agree. So in other words, it might even be better to just be by yourself than to tolerate foolishness. I fully agree with that.
Yeah, for a period of time.
Right. Let's take a look at tonight's topic. Do social relationships have to be difficult? We're going to go right to the story because we're already 20 minutes after the hour. And tonight, instead of it being characters, is actually a group discussion with family and friends. A group discussion with family and friends on a bright, sunny weekend afternoon. A group of family members and friends decided to get together simply to have what they called an educational and informational think tank. Okay, prior to their meetup, they agreed to focus their discussion of the afternoon on the topic, the difficulties of social relationships. That's their topic, the difficulties of social relationships. As their discussion progressed, it did not take long before the family members and friends got into a heated debate leading to the discussion to get out of control, causing the host to ask everyone to leave their home. Some of the issues that were included in the topic discussion included, number one, dating. Should it come with an expiration date? Number two, marriage. Why is it so important? Number three, racial issues. Why can't people simply get along, you know, when it comes to race? Number four, issues within cultures. Number five, family issues. Number six, parent-children issues. Number seven, siblings issues. Number eight, political issues. Number nine, religious and denominational issues. And 10, business and industry issues. The list is absolutely exhausting, which is what actually led everyone to disagree and have that major conflict. Ms. Blake, you've heard me mention these topics that they were trying to cover, and dating alone, you know, of course, when you have family and friends getting together as a group to discussing, you know, what goes wrong? I mean, what could possibly go wrong when somebody gives their opinion about dating? What do you think, Ms. Blake?
Oh, I can tell you right off the bat.
Okay.
If they're anything like my family, you get a bunch of educated, strong-willed folks together, and everybody thinks they know everything.
Okay.
I'm going to put it out. Now, the other thing is you have to have ground rules when you have these types of discussions. So you have to have those ground rules where you can tell people, you know, we have to let everybody talk or talk at the same time, respect each other's opinion. I don't know if they had ground rules, and that may have also contributed to it.
Yeah, and Ms. Blake, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that there have to be rules of engagement where you set the foundation, where, you know, you've got to have everybody talking about the importance of the respecting everybody's opinion, their views, even putting a time limit on one person speaking, you know, and even on the rebuttal to defend something that someone has said that others may have disagreed with. You know, and I think that if you can keep it short and sweet, I think that would work. We're going to go to the phone lines now. Looks like a 954-116. Who do we have on the air this evening?
This is Rose.
Rose, thank you for joining us. Rose, give us your take on that. I mean, why do people get upset over just giving their opinion when it came to just dating issues?
As I listened, the only thing that came to mind is that some people might be just a bit too controlling. And if a person or those involved are controlling, then they're going to feel as if someone else's opinion doesn't matter, or they might think everyone should agree with what they say because they think that they know, you know, everything. And because they want to be in such control, they cannot understand why anyone could disagree with what they put out there. So, I mean, that's the only thing that's what came to mind, is that some people might be too controlling, so they want everyone to agree with them. They just cannot fathom why anyone else could have an opinion outside of what they have.
I think that that's an interesting perspective, Rose, and we appreciate that, because I think that you've said it, Ms. Blake has said it, Ms. X, we're going to come to you momentarily. You know, it's a control mechanism, because, and Ms. Blake, you also said earlier that people want to be right. And Rose, you're alluding to that as well, saying that people want to be right in their thinking when they haven't given any research on something necessarily, and then because they want you to agree with them. Ms. X, let me just go to the next one and talk about marriage. Why is it so important? I mean, they had a discussion on that. Why is marriage so important, people were saying, or is it that important, or should it be viewed as that important? What do you think?
I think marriage is viewed as important from a biblical standpoint, in that, you know, if you're going to follow the commandments and, you know, thou shalt not commit adultery and thou shalt not commit fornication, so therefore you have to be married in order not to, fornication, I don't know about the adultery part, but the fornication. So you would have to be married so as not to go against that commandment. Nowadays, I don't know that people talk biblical, but I don't think they're following biblically enough because, you know, you got people that are just living together. I don't know that marriage holds the same significance that it did years ago, maybe like when my parents, I was married. And it certainly held the same significance for me, even though it didn't work, and I chose never to marry again, and I'm not married today because of that. But So I don't know. It may be an individual thing. Some people feel like they're not adequate until they've married, you know, because they're not complete until they find the other person. And some people are complete and they don't need anybody else to complete them.
All right, that's important. Ms. Blake, why do social relationships have to be difficult? I mean, dating is a social relationship. Marriage, of course, is a social relationship. Just these two topics that family and the friends got together on, what could possibly go wrong with those opinions on that? You know, that's a social gathering, and they couldn't even get together. They couldn't even discuss their views.
Well, because you have various personalities, you have various thoughts and points of view. Even among people who share that are Christians, they have such a wide variety of points of view. And so I think all of that comes into play when you start having that type of discussion.
Okay. Rose, let's jump over to you real quickly here, and we're going to jump down below to one of these issues that they were having in that discussion, and political issues. You know, why do you think, I mean, here it is, you know, you got Democrats, Republicans attacking each other, those are independents, and we're all just human, and yet you have people who, in the same parties, that might attack each other across stage, as we saw in this presidential election year, and then all of a sudden now it seems all is forgiven, and they endorse a certain candidate, you know, of their choices, of course. How do you just attack somebody and all is forgiven just like that? You know, how do you do that?
Oh, that's a difficult one for me to answer. But I believe if we're talking about the politics that we just saw in the last few months, you know, the candidates attacking each other on during their debate, and then all of a sudden, when one candidate tend to be the nominee, then all the others rally behind that one person. Sometimes I don't think it's totally personal. Everyone is trying to become the delegate, and so they put everything out there that they can and attack each other just so that they can be the one standing in the end. You know, so sometimes behind the scenes, there might be even be friends, you know. So I believe that it's just a matter of politics, the game that they play. You know, they attack each other so they could be the last one standing. And they come together when they realize the one that is standing needs the backing of everyone else. And because it's not totally personal, they're able to do whatever they said. During the debate, that's how I look at it. Right? You don't need to keep all of those things totally serious. I just think sometimes it's a game that they play.
Yeah, but I understand their quest to be the nominee. But let me go to Ms. X and ask her this question. I mean, if I had friends that were degrading me publicly like that, or even privately to an extent, I don't need them as my friend. You know, it's not a game for me. I mean, you're actually attacking my credibility, my character, and I don't find that amusing. Ms. X, let me go to you here and shift that. Do you need those kinds of friends, you know, on a social scale?
Well, the one thing that I want to say about the topics is that, first of all, each one comes with its own brand of controversy, right?
Okay.
from the start. So, therefore, it is going to be very difficult. Unless, and even if people are twins sometimes, triplets, I don't know, there's going to be very difficult because everybody has a different view on each one of these topics. So it's going to be very hard to agree on some of the same things because there are so many other factors that come into play with each person, with each individual and each individual's personalities and all sorts of things. So, and then, like I say, you pick some very controversial topics. You know, those are the kinds of topics that's going to generate a lot of conversation And you may not get a whole lot done, but you will get a lot of conversation out of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You won't resolve some issues, but you will have a lot of interesting conversation around them.
Right. Now, Ms. Blake, let me bring you in here. Item number 3 on your list of discussion was racial issues. Why can't people simply get along just because they are of other ethnicities? Why is race seemingly so important? Ms. X, we're going to come back to you on that one as well, but let me go to Ms. Blake. Why is that, I mean, in 2016, why does that seem to be a struggle with race?
Because it's always been a struggle. I think the biggest thing is, particularly I can talk to this country, is that we don't take the time to understand each other. And we're not tolerant of differences. I think those are key things. And it touches a chord. I think people just don't talk openly about race enough and admit their true feelings and true prejudices, and we all have them.
Okay, Ms. Blake, I want to interject just here, and Rose is going to bring you in just for a second. I want to interject there, and you say they don't have discussions of race enough. Well, here, in that group discussion, they talked about racial issues, which was one of the challenges that they had. But if people, and you mentioned, Ms. Blake, if people are allowed to express their true feelings, but it's those same expression of those true feelings that causes other people to become offended. So... Ms. Blake, defend that for me. Should you really express your true feelings?
Well, because first of all, and I think Ms. X alluded to it earlier, you have to create a safe environment. I've been in lots of culture diversity trainings, and you have to create a safe environment, an environment where you can freely say, well, I thought this about white people, I thought this about black people, and the folks that are of that race don't all get ready to, you know, get so angry about it. And that takes a lot because there's a lot of historical feelings about race.
Uh-huh. But let me just before I go to Ms. X on that one, let's go bring Rosie in. Now, you know, you have politicians out here, you have celebrities out here that a lot of people look up to. We individually, you or others may not necessarily look up to these people, but there's so many other people that look up to them. So if a celebrity or politician of your choice gets on there who you favor that just may happen to be of a different race than you are, then, Rose, the question goes to you. They say something that offends your culture, your community, your race, your ethnicity. Will you honestly look at that person, that celebrity or that politician who you looked up to, would you look at them in the same light?
Maybe not. Because I'm sure I would be offended if they said something negative about my race. And I agree with everything Ms. Blake just said, but I also want to say, you know, if everyone were to respect the other person's ethnicity, then you would have a better world. And acknowledge that it's not that one is better than the other. It's just that they're different, you know. So I think everyone needs to be maybe educated about the other races that's there, and appreciate the differences between or among the different races that we have.
If we can get to that point, then we would be making progress. Let's bring in Ms. X. Ms. X, give us your thought on that same line of questioning. You know, if some person that you looked up to, now they go public and they make this comment, let's just throw a name out there. Say Tom Hanks, for example. You know, that actor and, you know, very good actor from what, you know, I've seen the movies that he's played in. But if he gets up and he says something that's offensive to a community of people of another ethnicity, I agree with Rose. I don't think that they're going to look at him in the same light. So then, Ms. Blake, with what you're saying, I'll give you a chance when Ms. X comes in. Then now what starts to happen is it's like, oh, let's boycott, you know, the comments. Let's boycott watching his movies or anything along those lines. And now he's become defamatized, if that's a word, or defamed with a community of people. If he was to give his personal views, expressive views, as Ms. Blake said. Let me ask you, Ms. X, would that have an impact on how you view them now?
It would have an impact on how I view them because of the fact that, you know, historically and systematically, we've always had to deal with the ideology of white supremacy. And so when someone of that race says something that is insulting to someone of another culture, and I'm not just going to say black people, I'm going to say just of another culture, period. I mean, you know, it's derogatory. You know, we have a lot of stereotypes out there about certain groups and certain people. And to have someone in a position where they are a public figure and their bread and butter depends on the public, you know, for them to even get out and make a statement, a derogatory statement about someone of another race or culture, you know, they must not be really thinking about their future in whatever industry it is that they're in.
Right, but then that's, and Ms. Blake, we want to bring you in, that means that a person can't, I mean, they're reserved in expressing freely their true feelings, Ms. Blake. I mean, does that make a difference?
Okay, so you're saying that say the last part, Dr. Walker, I want to make sure I clearly understand your question or comment.
If a person, and we gave the name out there, Tom Hanks, if he were to say something that,
right,
in terms of expressing his true feelings, you know, based on his environment, his culture, his experience, his life experience, and it's offensive now because he's the magnitude of his level in the industry out there, and so many people that are millions that have watched him, and from different ethnic backgrounds who've admired him, now he says something as this public person. I mean, people are not going to look at him the same. So my question to you is, you say people should be able to have these discussions of race and feel free to give their true feelings about it. I mean, when that can actually have some repercussions.
Yeah, and it's I'm looking at that. It's different things. I think for me personally, I look at the context. I think years ago, and I can't remember his actual name, but he played Kramer on Seinfeld.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Said something
oh, Kramer,
that was
Kramer. Yeah, I remember that.
But I don't...
I remember that.
Right, but he seemed remorseful afterwards. And I think sometimes, I think we all may say something at times that if it's taken at that moment and put on social media or wherever, we'll say, oh my goodness, I really didn't mean to say that. Well, I didn't mean it that way. What it shows me is an upbringing. It shows me that sometimes things are embedded because of the culture. You can have a person that comes from a racist background, and they are not racist. They get along fine with all races, but something could slip up one day, and they say something, and everybody's like, oh, my goodness. Well, that person might even be shocked, but it has to do with they've been brought up around that. So it's something that is in their psyche. So I think I look at context and remorsefulness.
Okay. All right. Okay. Excellent. Let's take some of the comments that have come in just before we do that. Let's take another issue. One of the other things that this discussion group had conflict with was issues within cultures. Now, assuming that these were all of the same ethnicities, why would, you know, why do people, Ms. X, and this is for you, give us your synopsis of this. Why would people have difficulty issues within cultures? You know, you're from the Caribbean, I'm from over here, I'm from over there, and you all look alike. Why would they have a conflict on that?
I don't know. I believe that each culture, for whatever reason, probably sees themselves as superior to the other one. And I have a problem with that word superiority because we have been victims of that word, being that we have had others of other races and cultures who deem themselves superior over each and every one of us. So for us to turn around and do it to each other makes us no different than the perpetrators, you know, than our perpetrators. How can we find it wrong to be victims of them when we turn around and then victimize each other? So we're no better than our perpetrators.
Well, see, that's exactly what I think that that group discussion led to, because people are now realizing that you probably had somebody in that group that presented an issue just like you did in defense or rebuttal, and then there were those that didn't agree with that. And so here again, we get into the isolation components of not being able to respect each other's differences, you know, and the conflict just goes on and on. Miss Blake, give me some possible answer to there being a solution out there, if at all.
And a solution to which topic? Are you talking about in general or just?
Just in general, just, you know, do social relationships have to be difficult?
They don't. But again, it goes back to me saying we as human beings need to seek to understand each other more. I can't say that enough. The older I get, the more I realize that. Because we get into this thing where we think our culture is superior, our way of life is superior, our belief system is superior. And if we just take some time to seek to understand each other, I know I'm going to sound like the president, but I think we'll find that we're more alike than we are different.
Ms. X, I appreciate that. I want to bring something in that could be very powerful, and I'm going to ask you all, I'm going to present this out there. We're going to go to the phone line in just a second, 850-212, but just before I do, I want to put something out there, and I'd like you all to think about this and how you might respond to it. Ms. X, we're going to place emphasis on you with this here, and we're going to talk about the word genes. Could it be in people's genes? Could they inherit that gene of hate, prejudice, or bias? But let me go to the phone lines right quick. 850-212, welcome to the Dr. Jess Walsh Show. You're on the air live. Hi, we can't hear you. Who do we have? How you doing?
Pete, pretty good.
Good. Who's this Pete, you're saying?
Yeah, it's Pete.
Oh, C, you're saying? Give me
no,
the...
Pete.
Oh, T, okay, T, thank you for joining us. T, tell me, you know, what are your thoughts?
I didn't hear the question. What was the question?
What are your thoughts on do social relationships have to be difficult? Why is it that people just can't simply get along?
Well, from what I can see, it seems like I think everything is just the difference in the generation of people today. I mean, this younger generation is so far out of control, and it's no compromising with them. You try to. I mean, the older group, it seemed like we can get along and very well, I mean, with the exception of just a few. But this trying to get this younger generation to understand different things in life, they just so far gone. It's just hard to get to them.
Okay. All right. And I think that that's an interesting perspective. And, T, we're going to ask you to hold on and stand by. You're listening live to the Dr. Jess Walsh Show. If you've missed this one tonight, you will really want to go into the archives because this is a very heated one. This evening, tonight's topic is, do social relationships have to be difficult? And just like any other relationships, the topic we had last week, they don't have to be that way, but it's because of the way that we project ourselves and present ourselves out there. We're the ones as humans that make it difficult. Let me go now to T. We're going to ask you to stand by. We're going to come back to you. Let me go now to Miss X. I know that Miss X, you are itching to respond to my question. I know you are, you know, and is that gene, could that gene be a part of causing people to perpetually have a bias or a prejudice, even without their parents perpetuating that? Go ahead, Ms. X.
I don't think there's such a thing as that type of gene. I look at babies, because babies don't come into this world knowing that they are different from another baby in any way or any aspect. All they know is that they are interacting with something or someone who may look like they do or resemble them in some way or make sounds like they make. they recognize each other's cry. You know, these are things that are embedded in us through our environment, through our parents' teaching, through our social relationships with other people. No one is born with a gene that says that, you know, I'm going to be a racist or I'm going to grow up hating someone. These things are brought about as a response to upbringings, to environmental issues, things that infect our system, our body, our minds, our brains, contact with different chemicals, and we may have a defective gene that may cause personality disorders. It may cause us to be like exceptional, have an exceptional learning, a disability, or something like that. But one for just all out right hate, I don't know that there is a gene like that.
All right, we're going to ask you to stand by, because I'm thinking that we just may have opened up something for further discussion. Because I'm borderline thinking that there is that gene, because it's in the bloodline, that there may be something to that. Because when you think about it, If you have high blood pressure runs in your family, you go to the doctor and you're not feeling well or whatever the case is, now they need to look at your family history, the culture, that bloodline, to see the likelihood of something like this happening. So why, Ms. Blake, and this is coming for you now, why couldn't there be a possibility that there may have that gene in there? Because remember, we're, as the Bible says, we're born in sin, shaped into iniquity. You know, I mean, here we are, we're coming in, and children, and Ms. X, you mentioned about children actually have to be trained to do what's right. They have to be trained, because they come in with a propensity to do naturally what's wrong. That's a natural component. So let me go right over to you now.
I don't think it's naturally to do.
Yeah, I disagree, too.
Okay, go ahead. I want to hear that.
I was going to say, I don't think they come here naturally to do wrong. I think they come here naturally to do something, and because our perception is, based on our upbringing, that it is wrong, we have to unwrite it. We have to teach our way.
So you think that they come, Ms. X, if I hear you correctly, you think children come here with an inherent to, when I say inherited, I'm not talking financial, we're knowing to do right. I totally disagree.
No. They don't know right and they don't know wrong. They just do something. And as a parent and as an observer, as an observer, if that behavior is not what we consider right, then we have to reconstruct that behavior by teaching them. But if they happen to do something and it is according to what we consider to be right, then there's no teaching that has to go with it. They come here doing something, and then we correct or not correct.
Okay. All right. Well, then, let me ask you this here. Then, if that's the case, and Ms. Blake, don't go away. I need you to stay there with me. Then, if that be the case, Ms. X, why is that there's such a big argument on certain genders in terms of there's no male in the home, they didn't have this role model, then, I mean, that almost sounds as if, you know, that's a myth. That is almost like, okay, it's a requirement, it's a need for a male, young male, to have a father in that home, when that is not, is that really a requirement? Ms. Blake, let's go to you real quick, and then we'll bring Ms. X back in.
Well, speaking as a single mom who's raised two very successful sons, the answer is no. I don't believe the hype on that. I think it's great to have that, but it's better to have good male role models for them. Because if you've got a person in the home who's not modeling well, that's not helpful. But if you have them, there's no one in the home, but there's someone every day, a coach, a brother, uncle, whoever, that is constantly giving them a good influence, they'll turn out well. So,
okay.
But I got to speak on that other thing you were talking about.
Yeah,
whatever you want to
go ahead. Please. I know we're probably on different pages with that.
I agree with Mrs. X. We come into this world a blank slate, and I don't believe that we have some propensity to hate. And I'm sorry, people can jump all over me. I don't believe that we come into this world to just be evil little things, like our little babies that we hold are just some little evil things. I'm not buying that, because it's easy to love. It's very easy to love. And I know from personal experience, little children will play fine together. They are taught that kind of hate.
Okay, wow. So behavior, but then, you know, as a life coach, as a therapist yourself, Ms. Blake, you know the behaviors are learned, and they're also unlearned. There's propensity to do that which is wrong. Let's go to Rose just for a second. Rose has asked you, I mean, and here it is. I mean, this is a discussion topic that can open up down the road 20 years from now, 30 years from now. People can start to look at the prospect of that gene in children and say, because certainly there are single mothers who have said they have sons and sometimes daughters and say, my goodness, that child hasn't even been around that father. Now she's 6 years old and she's the spitting image of her dad in terms of his ways, his character, and his demeanor. And his, you know, all of this, all of those bad ways that she throws out there, she said that child is just like his father. Rose, give us your thought on that.
That's a hot one. I am going to agree, of course, that children do get, of course, their genes from their parents. Okay, and I know it's possible and highly possible, and actually it's true that even if the child have never been around their parents, because of the genes that they inherited from the parent, they can have the person's demeanor or personality or, you know, whatever comes along with their genes. However, I would have to say that I really do not believe that a person is going to inherit a racist gene from a parent. I really don't see that happening. I believe truly that's a learned behavior. I believe that parents in the home, the children, as they sit and listen to their parents or other family members and adult friends that come to their parents, they learn these things, you know, and hear what the parents and family or friends are saying about race and adopt to that same behavior as their parents. That's what I truly believe, because when kids are born, although, yes, they're born in sin and shaping in iniquity, but I really do not believe, I believe when, you know, different races as kids come together, they play together, and they don't have hatred for each other. And they don't even sometimes realize, hey, you know what, I'm different. They don't consider themselves better than the other person. They seem like they're all one, and they play together. And as they grow older and learn the behavior of their parents and their parents' friends that come around, they begin to develop that same behavior as their parents and then come to dislike the race that they have always been playing with. And, of course, it don't always happen that way, because some children grow up, and although they hear their parents speaking negative against another race, they still exhibit love towards that race.
Well, sometimes it comes down to a decision, but I think, you know, and I know all of you all are opposed to what I'm saying, and that's okay. We're just giving our views here, and I'm not saying this as an absolute. I'm not saying that, but the question is, I put it in question form, could it be that there's a gene that's inherited in children to develop these biases? Because I believe, now I do believe this, that there is a propensity there. You know, a propensity there to do what's wrong more so than to do what's right. I think it's our nature to lean towards doing the wrong thing as opposed to doing the right thing. I think it takes more of an effort to train us to do, or to train children to do what's right, than it does for them, because they're naturally going to do what's wrong. You know, I mean, Ms. X, to turn the other cheek. That's almost a lifetime lesson, to turn the other cheek. Somebody slaps you, you ready to slap the daylights out of them back. Ms. X, help me out with that.
I think the genealogical versus the psychological. I don't believe that, well, anything it could be possible. So, I mean, anything could be possible. But the thing is, I don't think that, again, children are born with a propensity. You know, when you're little, parents get so upset because the child makes a mistake. Well, the child doesn't know. Now, once you've taught it and the child consistently makes that same mistake over again, then you have to be behind that kid to find out, well, why you keep doing the same thing? Maybe there's some kind of psychological thing, issue going on, or maybe some kind of behavioral problem that is existing. But children are going to do things. Children don't know whether they're doing right or doing wrong until they're taught the difference.
They do
something. You as the observer and parent watching them, you say, oh, no, don't do that. No, don't do that. And then when they do something that you expect, you give them praise and reassurance to ensure that they continue that type of behavior. But the kid is trying to figure it out. That's why I have a hard time with parents who yell and scream when children make mistakes. That is all a part of the way that they have to learn. You know, when I pick up dirt, we have to learn and taste and feel textures in our mouth. Is one of the first ways that we do these things. So if I pick up something off of the floor and I put it in my mouth, of course, you know, sanitarily, it's not right. So you teach the kid he doesn't eat from the floor, but he's only testing his environment. He doesn't know that. He doesn't come with that knowledge. That's why they give the parents to children and they don't give children to parents.
Well, do we have, Ms. Blake, let me go to you, Ms. H. We're going to ask you to stand by. The producer is telling me we're going to continue with this show. We'll hold all comments. We will do a part two on this one next week because it's such a heated topic. Ms. Blake, let me go to you because we're almost out of time here. And let me just ask this question then. Why we got to tell children to do the right thing 1,000 times? You know, the propensity is here for them to do wrong. And then secondly here, you know, I mean, who can understand the mind of God? If we go back to the days of Noah, and he destroyed an entire population of people, including babies. Because I'm thinking the propensity is there to grow up to be exactly like those parents. So, Ms. Blake, you know, how was it only 8 people? Help me out here, Ms. Blake.
Let's go back. It's basic psychology here. Because, again, this is why I don't sit up there and buy into this hype that, you know, we're so bad and our kids are so bad and we're born bad. I'm sorry. I don't buy into the hype because Ms. X alluded to it. Kids are exploring their environment. I've heard even preachers say, well, you know kids are bad, they're evil. You tell them don't touch the stove, they'll go try to touch the stove. No, they're exploring their environment, you know, and that is just natural. And I think we assign labels that are just not there sometimes. Because if the kids we call good, that sit still and do nothing, chances are they have a developmental delay.
Okay. All right. But isn't that what happens in certain communities? They always want you to just sit still and be good. And then they praise you, as Ms. X says, to modify or to model that, have that behavior modeled all the time. But the kids, where's the exploration in that? You're telling, as a teacher, you're saying, let's just say, for example, you're telling a kid, oh, sit down and behave, when in gifted classes, those kids, their mobility is what brings about their learning. Ms. X, go ahead.
That kid that gets out there and explores that environment, that rebellious kid, that kid is probably going to be, in a lot of instances, a much more well-rounded and learned child. Sometimes the rebelliousness may lead to other problems, but that is not the goal of it. That kid that just sits quiet is not inquisitive. is not going to learn as much, unless, of course, they're a quiet observer, because you can learn from observing. You don't always have to be in the mix to learn.
We're completely out of time on this one here. We're going to continue this discussion on next week. Ms. X, we want you to come back and be our featured guest for next week, because it's going to even get even better than this. Will you join us next week, Ms. X, for our featured guest?
I will try, but you know I have other obligations, but I will try.
Okay, thank you so very much. Hey, give us the last word. Do social relationships have to be difficult?
They do not. Particularly if we seek to understand one another, that will make it easier.
All right. On that note, we're clearly out of time. I've enjoyed everybody, those of you all that sent in your comments, and those of you all we weren't able to get to over the air, we do apologize for that. We will get with you next week. We'll take all the comments that have come in tonight, and we will continue the show on next week. Do social relationships have to be difficult? Part two. Join us this Friday for your half-hour inspiration program. Of course, if you choose to bypass this Friday, join us again live next Tuesday for the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Until Friday or until next Tuesday, let's say to my listening audience, good night, God bless, and thank you, God.